Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Worm A podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Updates on coronavirus, Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force, and we kick off our collaborative series, Graying Pains, exploring Montana's aging population. It's Friday, June 5th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Spring is the time of year when rivers run fast with a winter's worth of mountain snowmelt. Kay Erickson talked with the National Weather Service about the dangers lurking along the riverbank.
National Weather Service meteorologist Joe Lester says this is the time of year, climatologically speaking, when rivers run high and dangerous, even if they're not flooding.
The water is very cold. With bank erosion, you never know quite how stable or unstable a bank is, but there's always some bank erosion every spring. So we, encourage people to stay off the river and also stay away from the river. Don't get up near the bank to try to see what's happening.
Although river levels are slowly receding, high water levels earlier this week at more than 10 fishing access signs in south central Montana prompted Montana's Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to restrict traffic to walk-in only. Those restrictions will remain in place until flood water recedes and repairs can be made. Lester says this weekend's forecast is for a chance of rain and thunderstorms, but those should not impact river levels. Next week's forecast calls for cooler temperatures, even in the lower elevations, with some snow possible above 8,000 or 9,000 feet. I'm Kay Erickson, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Health officials say the results from wastewater sampling in West Yellowstone align with 5 new COVID-19 cases. Rachel Kramer reports.
On a press call Thursday, Gallatin County Health Officer Matt Kelly said recent wastewater sampling results show an increased amount of the novel coronavirus in the Gateway community.
The wastewater sampling does not currently help us know how many people may be carrying the virus, but it does establish an important baseline from which to measure results later this summer and fall.
Researchers from Montana State University have been working with the Gallatin City County Health Department to monitor the virus's particles in wastewater, which are mostly intact but are no longer infectious by the time they reach treatment plants. The concentration of the virus's genetic material indicates COVID-19's prevalence in the community. Kelly said wastewater sampling from Bozeman and Big Sky have not shown measurable amounts of the novel coronavirus as of Thursday. He said wastewater sampling is scheduled to begin soon in Three Forks. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Montana is expanding state grant programs developed from federal COVID-19 relief money aimed at easing the economic impacts of the pandemic. Local businesses have already requested tens of millions of dollars amid the economic downturn. Governor Steve Bullock announced yesterday meat processors and local governments can now apply for economic relief grants. Meat processors can receive up to $150,000 to pay for new equipment needed to deal with increases in processing or storage of livestock and other costs associated with changes due to COVID-19. Tom Livers, director of the State Budget Office, says it's unclear how much the state could send out to county and city governments looking for financial help.
We're standing up a program to reimburse all eligible expenses for costs incurred as a result of responding to the pandemic. It's pretty speculative right now to know exactly how big that number is going to be.
The governor's office says demand for financial relief from a separate business stabilization program has surpassed its original $50 million allocation. Bullock says the state will send an additional $25 million into that program, which has already received over 8,000 applications from businesses in the state. Montana's COVID-19 case count continues to rise as travel restrictions and business closures are lifted and testing becomes more widely available. Rachel Kramer reports the state health department added 14 new lab-confirmed cases yesterday.
Health Officer Matt Kelly said in a press call Thursday that Gallatin County has 11 active cases of COVID-19.
We are seeing cases with no clear link to other cases or to travel out of state. This is an indication that we are once again seeing community transmission of the virus in Gallatin County.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says community transmission or spread means some people with the disease are not sure how or where they became infected.
In some ways, this is not surprising. We expected to see more cases as we worked to ease certain restrictions on businesses and manage the end of the governor's stay-at-home directive.
On a press call shortly after, Governor Steve Bullock said the recent bump in cases were expected and would not lead him to reinstate business closures and travel restrictions that have been lifting in phases since April.
Where I would have much greater concern is if we got back to a point where we had widespread community spread. So meaning that COVID-19 is substantially more cases in a community and we can't identify where those cases are coming from.
The state and partners have recently expanded testing to anyone who wants to be tested at long-term care facilities and tribal reservations, with plans to begin surveillance testing in some communities, clinics, emergency rooms, and dentist offices. Surveillance testing means a sample group in a community or workplace is tested to monitor the spread of the disease. While most tests from surveillance events returned negative, Bighorn County identified several cases where the patient showed no symptoms. Officials say catching these asymptomatic spreaders is vital to containing the virus through isolation and contact tracing. As of Thursday afternoon, Montana's statewide database showed a total of 55 active COVID-19 cases. Bighorn County had the most with 27 active cases. Yellowstone County had 12, many associated with the county's jail, while Ravalli and Missoula counties each had one active case. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
The Billings Police Department said at a press conference yesterday it will do its utmost to ensure a safe and peaceful Sunday rally for racial equity and nonviolence in police interactions. Kayla DeRoche reports organizers in a number of Montana cities are planning events this week.
The locally organized Billings event is part of a string of nationwide protests against racial violence in the days following the death of George Floyd, a black man who died while in Minneapolis police custody. Billings Police Chief Rich St. John on Thursday denounced the officer's behavior and said the BPD is in full support of peaceful protest.
To anyone coming, know that we are doing everything we can to make sure that everyone's voices are heard, nobody's rights are infringed upon, and that whoever is protesting, whether they agree with one another or not, stay safe.
He echoed other Montana police chiefs in saying that despite rumors on social media, there is no credible evidence to suggest groups such as far-left-leaning militant group Antifa would be at the rally this weekend to incite violence. Billings organizers say the rally will be a peaceful show of support for Floyd and others who have been apprehended unjustly because of their skin color. Local groups are also putting together an event in Bozeman in line with the National Day of Action Friday. An event was also planned in Missoula, but organizers postponed it Thursday evening due to safety concerns. Governor Steve Bullock on Thursday said he has no immediate plans to mobilize the National Guard to respond to the protests, adding the events are firmly within local law enforcement's jurisdiction. President Donald Trump earlier this week urged governors to respond with force to protests that turn violent or destructive. Events in Billings, Great Falls, Havre, Helena, Missoula, and Whitefish over the last week have drawn disparate crowds but remained nonviolent. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force reconvened Wednesday for the first time since April to review their work to date and go over future goals, including an upcoming legislative report due this fall. Caitlin Nicholas reports.
The task force's report for the State Tribal Relations Interim Committee, due by September, will make recommendations to legislators based on its research and work over the past 2 years. On Wednesday's meeting via Zoom, Tina Chamberlain, the MIP Link Grant Coordinator, presented a recent analysis of State Department of Justice data. The analysis found Native Americans are 4 times more likely to go missing than other demographics. The majority of young people who go missing more than once, and Bighorn County has twice the rate of missing persons per capita than the next county, Rosebud.
The analysis in this report is the most comprehensive missing persons inquiry that we know of by any other state in the country. Looking deeper into the active cases from the past 3 years, looking at education records, youth court records, tribal records, will help us understand not only who is going missing, but why they are going missing.
The state's new missing persons specialist, Brian Frost, says he's standing up new protocols to involve Child Protective Services in all relevant missing persons cases and to continue efforts to align state, tribal, and law enforcement databases. Frost also discussed an upcoming training to include more photos on missing persons alerts.
It's easy to report someone missing and say, okay, well, they're 5'4", they're 100 pounds, they're female, they have brown hair. But that describes a lot of Montana. And unfortunately, missing youth, sometimes we don't get a lot of photos. This will help kind of bridge that gap.
COVID-19 has slowed the task force's progress, but they hope to reconvene in July and August. Caitlin Nicholas, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Caitlin Nicholas is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America tribal affairs reporter. The novel coronavirus is causing decreased demand for electricity across the United States. And while it can be hard to see a measurable impact on Montana's renewable energy sector, industry members say larger operations are resilient in the face of the novel coronavirus pandemic. Kayla DeRoche updates Nikki Ouellette on Montana's renewable industry.
So, Kayla, oil and gas have hit some pretty rocky extremes in the past couple of months. How do members of the renewable industry say they're doing here in Montana?
The Montana Renewable Energy Association is a group that advocates for small renewable energy developers like rooftop solar and small wind. Andrew Valinas is the executive director of that group. He said they're seeing changes to customer interaction, like they're not going to go inside homes. There have been some changes to business protocol. There have been some permitting issues because everything is being done by mail. So there have been some just day-to-day changes. He's also saying that there have been some delays in installing rooftop solar and some potential project cancellations.
With the pandemic going on, people are concerned about, you know, the economic downturn. And so it's potentially a tough time to put forward a big investment like that.
So small scale kind of home projects are maybe in a tenuous position. What about bigger, large scale solar and wind projects?
Industry members tell me that larger operations tend to be more resilient than smaller operations. Jeff Fox is Montana policy manager with Clean Energy Advocacy Organization, Renewable Northwest. And he's saying that those types of larger scale facilities like wind farms or hydroelectric facilities are more robust than some of the smaller operations.
That's because they are on long-term contracts with utilities, and those utilities are in relatively good financial health and are not particularly subject to drastic effects of the coronavirus on their business.
Valinas is saying that residential electricity is up because everyone's at home. Commercial electricity is down, and that's something that Greg Copeland, who works with Naturenner, says. Copeland is vice president of asset management with Naturenner, which is the company that runs these three large wind farms in Montana. Copeland said in mid-May that Naturenner sells power on the open market on an hourly basis, but he was seeing energy demand drop significantly due to COVID-19, in some cases by 10 to 15%.
So we're seeing merchant prices right now lower than was projected, and in fact, lower than has been experienced in quite some time.
So larger operations are also seeing some effects for right now. What's hard to say is what the long-term effects will be.
During the pandemic, furloughs, layoffs have been kind of, you know, across industries affecting everyone. And that's true for the coal world as well. Navajo Transitional Energy Company laid off 130 workers at Montana mines in April. What about for renewable energy? Have we seen the same sort of job losses there?
State data show that there have been around 25 claims for unemployment insurance in the solar, hydro, and wind industry between early February and late May. There's nothing definitively linking those numbers to COVID-19, even if they're related, but it's a possibility the pandemic could be contributing. Also, the number of residents who use renewable energy right now is pretty small. Montana Renewable Energy Association Executive Director Andrew Valinas, he makes a distinction between large and small-scale renewable energy. So large-scale is hydro or wind, small-scale is mostly solar, and he's saying that only around 3,000 or 3,500 small-scale net metering customers are actually in Montana, and that's compared to tens of thousands of customers in California or Massachusetts. So it's tiny in Montana in comparison. And Montana is still a coal state, and that's what Andrew Valinas said. You know, federal data backs that up. Data show the state's production is 50% coal and 50% renewables, and a large percent of that is hydro. So nationwide, renewables are catching up to coal. A report from the U.S. Energy Information Administration says renewable energy consumption recently surpassed coal for the first time in over 130 years. But Montana just isn't there yet.
You know, thinking as Montana continues through its economic reopening plan, what are you hearing kind of looking forward in terms of how energy producers are going to be doing?
It can be hard to tell with renewable energy what's going to happen moving forward as a result of COVID-19, but there are some resources we can look at. So I spoke with Northwestern Energy, which is the largest electric utility in the state. They say they're not really changing their position towards renewable energy during this time. And construction of renewable energy operations does seem to be going forward as planned as of right now. If we look at projects that were planned before the pandemic, PacifiCorp is building Prior Mountain Wind near Bridger, and that seems to be on track. At least that's what a spokesperson recently told me. He said it'd be in service by the end of the year. So it looks like the larger operations are pretty secure at this point, as far as we know.
That was Kayla DeRoche talking to Nikki Ouellette about Montana's renewable industry during the ongoing coronavirus pandemic.
With Montana News, I'm Nikki Ouellette. Montana is the oldest state west of the Mississippi, and demographic projections show the state growing collectively older as more Montanans enter their senior years. The economic, cultural, and personal impacts of that trend present the state and its residents with new challenges, and with those challenges, opportunities. Graying Pains is a series of weekly stories exploring those challenges, but more so, opportunities. Graying Pains is produced by the Montana Fourth Estate Project. For our kickoff installment, we're checking in with Eric Dietrich of the Montana Free Press for some context about Montana's aging. Eric, when you look at Montana 5, 10, 20 years from now, what does the state look like?
So the official statistics are this. As of 2017, 18% of Montanans were older than 65, which of course is the traditional retirement age. That's been on the rise. It's up from 14% in 2001, so 20 years ago. And it's projected to rise more. It's supposed to reach 22% by 2030, and then probably plateau after that.
What does it mean that a bigger and bigger proportion of Montana's population will be older than 65 in coming years?
Yeah, so there are kind of two buckets of issues here. The first are community and state scale issues. So that's, you look at things like how many people are there in the workforce relative to the number of retirees. As our population gets older, you know, there are going to be more retirees. Things like the healthcare industry, is there the capacity there to care for people that are older and need more medical care? For other sorts of businesses, are there people to work those jobs and manage them? Talking to people about this, you also start to hear about issues in community leadership roles, whether that's a local business or, you know, local community organizations that volunteer type things. As people age out of being in those roles, are there younger people available to fill in and step in and fill those niches?
So that's the community scale roles. What's the second bin that you mentioned?
Right, yeah, and those individual issues, right? Like, how do we deal with aging? The personal story there. Have we saved enough for retirement? Can we navigate the healthcare system? If we have aging parents, how do we help them navigate those things?
There's a lot to think about.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about.
Is the trend of Montana's aging, is that playing out the same in communities across the state?
No, this is actually where it gets interesting. So again, we look back to those top line stats. 18% of Montanans were older than 65 in 2017, but that varies wildly across the state. University towns tend to be much younger. For example, in Gallatin County, which is around Bozeman and Montana State University, 12% of the population is 65 plus versus 18%, so that's a third less. And then you look at rural areas, they tend to be older. For example, Teton County outside of Great Falls, the senior percentage is 22%, so 4% higher than the state, 18%.
The point of this reporting series, Graying Pains, we want to look not just at the problems, but also highlight potential solutions. We're looking for answers. Where are there highlights of places doing a really good job of supporting that aging community? Who's kind of ready and ahead of the curve? So, Eric, you know, what's in store for these stories that we're going to be hearing over the next couple of weeks? What bright spots do you see?
Great. Yeah, so there's several stories I'm looking forward to reading myself, actually. The first one is about Village to Village, which is a national program that recently launched in Kalispell. And as I understand it, it's essentially a senior-run co-op where members come together and then are able to help each other with things like transportation or household chores, stuff that can get harder as you get up there in years. So I'm looking forward to understanding how that model works. And it sounds like it's something that's been fairly widely adopted in other parts of the country, and Kalispell might be the first place in Montana that has it. So that should be pretty interesting. And then we have a reporter looking at a program in north central Montana that is about helping older women stay able to live independently by offering them strength training classes. There are a bunch of ideas here. Some of them are things that have taken root in Montana. Some are things from other states. The goal of our reporting here is to understand how those programs are working and which of those ideas that, you know, kind of sound good when you talk about them like this are actually practical and worth looking and implementing in our communities.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for sharing your reporting and previewing this big series, Graying Pains, with us.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me.
This week in Graying Pains, we're talking about beating loneliness and making family where you are. For seniors in Missoula County, a well-established program matches foster grandparents with students who need a little extra attention. University of Montana journalism student Sydney Hansen reports on how the children and volunteers help each other.
Goodbye, said the cat.
Okay. Why did the kitty say goodbye?
Hawthorne Elementary School students get extra help from their school grandma, Nancy Jordan.
I always say, I'm just here to love you to start with, and then we'll see what we can do later on.
Jordan volunteers at a foster grandparent program at Missoula Aging Services. She has been working at the schools in Missoula for 5 years.
Over.
Jordan has a family and grandkids of her own, but they live in a different state, so she doesn't see them as much. She says her foster grandkids help fill that void.
And I live here and I prefer to stay here, I don't know. I like my life the way it is, and I love all children, so I can make them mine too.
The distance between Jordan and her family is normal in our current society. According to a study by the AARP, over half of grandparents live more than 200 miles away from their grandchildren.
Okay.
Dogs, pans, chops. Well.
Jordan and the other foster grandmothers and grandfathers work at schools around the Missoula area to help kids catch up on subjects teachers say they need extra help in. She says that working at the schools connects her with the teachers as well.
Our school is like a family. I mean, the teachers are all on the same boat. They all teach the same way. So when a foster grandmother comes in, if she's willing to learn from them, let them show her, she just becomes a part of the team.
Isn't that a good word?
A key word. Let's use our picture clues.
A.
And let's start saying the
sound. Ooh, that's a new word. What's that sound?
We had a volunteer who was a participant in a social isolation study, and he said, you know, one of the biggest things I'm grateful for beyond my family and my health is this program. I love going to the school. I love that kids light up when they see me.
Foster grandparent coordinator Adrian Hopkins says that many foster grandparents come in for similar reasons.
They want to have a reason to get up in the morning. Their grandkids have moved away and they would like to interact with kids. They want to feel like they're making a difference and really have a life purpose.
Dozens of foster grandparents work with hundreds of kids across the Missoula area. The program is one of many around the nation and one in dozens of Senior Corps programs that elderly volunteers can choose from. Senior Corps Program Manager at Missoula Aging Services, Colleen Baldwin, says she has seen the changes from the foster grandparents through her 20 years of working with them.
The grandparents themselves talk about what it does for them. The women will say, it gets me up in the morning, a reason to put on my lipstick.
Hopkins says the program benefits the children too.
And also the relationships that are formed when you see somebody every day in your class. So this is an opportunity for them to interact with someone and know that they can count on that person to be there and to care about them.
I lost my tooth.
You did lose it. Oh my goodness.
Isn't that exciting?
The program in Missoula has helped all the kids improve at their school and half meet their desired goals.
A fire engine went over the bridge.
Baldwin says that regardless of how you look at the program, everyone is helped.
All the way around, it's just this perfect circle. It benefits the teachers so much. It benefits the children, but what it does for our seniors who do this work, and when they open their heart and they start to tell you, I get up in the morning, I put a smile on, I love it.
Baldwin says that no matter what someone is doing, volunteering can really change who they are for the better.
But what I love is what it changes in the life of the volunteer. They come to us thinking, I want to help. But pretty soon they're telling you, do you know what this is doing for me? Volunteerism opens an opportunity for you to be somebody else.
Jordan says she believes everyone has the ability to volunteer and help one another.
The fact that they think they may not have something to give, they have so much.
The Foster Grandparent Program accepts volunteers across the nation who are 55 years and older. For more information, you can go to nationalservice.gov and look under the Senior Corps programs.
Since Sydney Hansen reported this story for KGBA, the novel coronavirus pandemic has put a massive pause on the foster grandparent program provided by Missoula Aging Services. Andy Bourne with the Seely Swan Pathfinder has continued reporting on the program that places seniors in the classroom. So, Andy, what happened to the foster grandparents program after the first case of COVID-19 was identified in Montana in mid-March?
Well, the foster grandparents in Missoula County were notified by Missoula Aging Services on Friday, March 13th, that they could no longer return to the schools, basically until further notice. And so that was prior to the governor shutting the schools down on March 16th. Basically, that was to protect their health and also the health of the students.
Did foster grandparents, even though they weren't going into the schools, are they still receiving some support from the program?
They are. Actually, the Corporation for National and Community Service, that is the federal funder for the Senior Corps program, which is what the foster grandparent program is under, have approved the stipend to extend for 10 weeks following the March 13th when they suspended the program.
So a nice little bit of relief there.
Yes, it is. No, it's been very helpful to the ones that I've talked to. They should be receiving their final check here shortly.
And you've been speaking with Pearl Hawkins. She's a foster grandparent at Seely Lake Elementary School. How has she been doing since COVID hit?
She said she's gotten a lot of projects done, but her biggest thing is she just misses the kids. She said that, you know, it's just depressing. And there's a reason that she's been in the school, and that's it keeps her young. It keeps her moving every day. It's a reason to get up in the morning.
Is there a way that Pearl can still interact with the kids or with the classroom and to keep the program running, even if it's not face-to-face?
Well, Pearl, like many of our older folks in the community, don't actually have access to the technology. The preschool class that she works in has been doing Zoom meetings twice a week, and she honestly didn't even know that was happening because she hadn't been getting the announcements online. Missoula Aging Services is actually working on some different programs to help connect the foster grandparents in a virtual setting, but it hasn't happened yet.
You know, thinking really long term into next school year, is Missoula Aging Services or the school even thinking about how to revive the foster grandparents program and how that might look?
Well, Colleen Baldwin, who you spoke with before, was very clear that this is a hiatus. She does not want to see the foster grandparent program go away, but she also is very aware that there's going to be and have to be a new normal with it. And so Missoula Aging Services is committed to keeping the program going and those intergenerational relationships they find very valuable for both the students and the foster grandparents. But exactly how that's going to look, there's been a lot of discussion, there's been a lot of talk, again, around the technology and then what they could do with the distancing in the classroom.
Andy, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for addressing these opportunities and challenges in aging.
Thanks to Andy Bourne of the Seely Swan Pathfinder for her reporting. You can read Andy's story and more from the Graying Pains series on our website, ypradio.org. Check back on Fridays for new installments. I'm Nikki Ouellette. Thanks for listening.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.